Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everybody, and a very happy new year to you all. It's this time of year when most people are exploring new options and setting new goals and objectives, and today we are all about exploration. My first guest says he'd like to see society doing more and thinking and talking less. He's one of the world's leading explorers, and we'll experience a little vicarious adventure with Tim Jarvis in just a moment. Later, we'll be joined by writer, dreamer, believer, and veteran yoga teacher, Megan McCrary, who will explore the many forms of yoga, including their philosophies, benefits, and how to discover the best practice for you. Well, first, I'm pleased to welcome Tim Jarvis. He's one of the world's leading explorers. He holds the record for the fastest unsupported journey to the South Pole and the longest unsupported journey in Antarctica. He's a best-selling author and filmmaker, public speaker. He's also a senior associate of sustainability for Australasia and director of an outcome-focused environmental initiative called Do Tank. He's a sustainability advisor on multilateral aid projects and has a master's in environmental science and environmental law. He's also a 2009 Yale World Fellow and 2010 member of the Order of Australia for service to conservation and the environment. So as well as being an adventurer, he's very highly accomplished. And we're going to talk today about his latest adventure and subsequent book, Chasing Shackleton, Recreating the World's Greatest Journey of Survival. Tim Jarvis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Vicki. Great to be here.
And we're going to talk about this recent journey that you took. But before we talk about that, Tim, I want to just go back just a few years to when you were around seven and when your love of adventure and exploration began. You were born and raised in England. You were out in Malaysia and your parents told you just go explore. Is this where it all started for you?
Look, I think it was, Vicki. I think this is back in the mid-70s when there was no, dare I say it, nothing good on TV, pre-internet, no mobile phones. And I was a kid with a bike and a dog and a large amount of relatively wild, unexplored jungle, even in and around Kuala Lumpur, which is the capital of Malaysia. And, I developed a real resourcefulness and a real love of discovering things for myself. So I think that's probably where it did begin.
Yeah. And so you go to school and you're studying environmental law, environmental science. At what point did you even make a conscious choice that you are going to give your messaging out to the world via the adventures that you go on?
Well, I think the penny really dropped for me after a few years of doing the speaking about the expedition. The original thought was, acquire as many qualifications as I could, be well qualified to talk about these kinds of issues, and surely the public and the corporate world and politicians will sit up and listen to the kind of things you have to say. But the reality is that people often take on board new ideas and really take on board concepts in the form of a story. And I found that I was getting more and more interest in my polar expeditions, which originally were just done for an adventure as much as anything, and it's
right.
Self-exploration, self-discovery. And so I started, probably 10 years ago, to really focus heavily on the opportunities they provided for me to get across the environmental messages.
So then you, as you said, had already done some explorations, which you are known for now. Why did you choose to do the Shackleton? I read that you said that, Sir Edmund Hillary said it was the most difficult feat, and you said that might have played into it.
Yes, look, I think if you're someone who likes the mountains, loves the outdoors, loves Antarctica, the ocean, the self-discovery that the journey of self-discovery you go on, as well as the literal journey going to these faraway places, then I guess Shackleton's journey in his 23-foot keelless wooden rowboat from Antarctic and sub-Antarctic is always a story that you're kind of aware of at some level. And I guess I probably entertain the idea of, you know, maybe one day I could myself mount a serious attempt to do that which has remained unachieved since his original trip. But it was when Alexandra Shackleton, his granddaughter, actually asked me if I would assemble a team 6 or 7 years ago that obviously I started to take it far more seriously. And I said to her at the time, you know, I have another expedition I'm currently involved with, but I tell you what, if I'm successful with that, it'll be the first thing on my list. And of course, I was successful at the previous thing. And she called me immediately and said, okay, you said you would. What do you say now? And I said, okay, I will. I would love to. I'd be very honoured to assemble a team to attempt it.
I was going to say that is quite an honour, because I know that Shackleton family is very protective about Shackleton, because he did take a lot of criticism back in the time when he set off on this journey, and you know they were basically missing for 3 years, weren't they?
That's right. I mean, I think probably from the heroic era when both Shackleton and Scott were doing their expeditions, all the way up to probably the 1960s, 1970s, I think Scott was in the ascendancy. I think people felt, you know, he'd made the ultimate sacrifice, died along with all of his men. You know, he was the hero figure. He was the one to look up to. And, you know, Shackleton was slightly in the shadows. And I think in the last 30 or 40 years, people have realized the error of that judgment. Mm-hmm. And the fact that Shackleton was, you know, a leader for all occasions. He brought his men home alive against really almost impossible odds. So there's been a real renaissance in thinking about Shackleton in the last 30 or 40 years. And the family have been very pleased with that, but they haven't influenced it. They've just allowed it to sort of play out as it would. And I feel very honoured, like you say, to have been asked by them to lead the expedition.
Yeah, well, I think it's Shackleton's story and your story too, particularly Shackleton's, because there was no way out for them really. You know, they didn't have any technology that we had today, even though you recreated his equipment, etc. But it just was such an inspiring story, I think, of courage and trust between those men, because he did leave some of his men on an island in an attempt to go find help. I mean, you know, those people who were left there had to trust him, and he had this tremendous pressure to get, you know, to land and find help for them, which he ultimately did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is why he was such a fantastic leader. He's now taught at many leading management schools, including places like Yale and Harvard and
right.
You know, MIT and Wharton, and just to name ones in the US.
Right.
You know, it's because he had this ability to understand when a goal was no longer achievable and to refocus, to change on the run and refocus on the achievement of a new goal, and then really put out a vision, you know, set out a vision as to how the new goal was going to be achieved with such confidence that even though his men were in a very desperate situation, frankly, with very little chance of survival, they believed him and they trusted him.
Right.
Both the ones left behind on the island, the 22 men he left behind under the two upturned boats, and the five that got in, frankly, the very unseaworthy small rowboat that he took across the Southern Ocean and in the desperate rescue bid. And I think, you know, it's testament to who he was as a man that he managed to instill such trust in people. And, you know, he led from the front. He never asked people to do something he wasn't prepared to do himself. He often did the longest shifts and often gave up, you know, his share of the rations to a man that was more in need than him. Never made a big deal out of it. And so, you know, he instilled such trust in people that they would have followed him to the ends of the earth, quite literally.
Yeah, it is very inspiring. So let's talk about your journey to recreate this. I know it was 4 years in the planning, 4 years of research. Where did you even start for this, Tim?
Well, I started obviously with being asked to do it by the family. The first thing really was to try and look at the viability of copying the boat. And, of course, the original James Caird, the little 23-foot boat that they took across the ocean, is still in existence. It's at his school in South London. So the first thing to do was to start looking at whether or not we could replicate this boat, which we were able to do. We enlisted a traditional boat building firm who just did it. They did it for free. They did it just for the cost of the materials. I worked on it together with them. And gradually the boat took shape. As the boat took shape, you know, various interested parties started to come forward. They started to see that the momentum was building. I was mm-hmm. enlisted the assistance of sponsors, and all through that process, of course, was trying to recruit the right people for the job. And of course, it's a small community spread across the world, and the right people came forward at the right time, and the team started to coalesce, and the whole thing just gathered momentum. I think it's fair to say it was a roller coaster. It didn't all go smoothly, but nothing's changed in 100 years, I guess. And we got to the stage where obviously we were in a position to do it, and we're able to do it.
Right. And you had a lot of integrity around recreating this the way that Shackleton experienced it, even to the point of landing the wrong side of the island like he did and climbing through those mountains. I'm sure you had many moments where you were wondering, what the heck am I doing? But does one jump out in particular?
Well, that moment would have probably been day one, I think. we cast off from Point Wild on Elephant Island, which is a very desolate spot. And, we were in the wind shadow of the island. We landed on a day when the wind came from the south. His camp was on the northern side of Elephant Island, where we started. So that was great in one respect, but in the other respect, it was actually quite dangerous to get away from the island. We found ourselves really struggling to escape the clutches of the island.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were almost immediately hit with the storm, and it really hit home to me immediately just how frightening it can be on the Southern Ocean. In a boat that's ready to capsize, frankly, at any moment, the only thing keeping it upright was the skill of really the sailors on board and the skills they'd instilled in us as a team. I'm a climber rather than a sailor. And, and constant vigilance and about a ton of rocks and camera batteries in the bottom of the boat, the same weight as Shackleton had.
Right.
But it was very important for us to do it as he had. No point doing it in a different vessel, because you can make it easier for yourself. You've really got to try and experience it
right.
just the way he did, to honour what he went through.
Right, and that was true of when you climbed over the mountains too. You basically did that with virtually no climbing gear, just like Shackleton.
That's right. I mean, we had to land on the southern side, which is where the weather takes you to. And, of course, all the whaling stations are on the more sheltered side of South Georgia, the island he was trying to reach. And so he had to climb through the mountains for the first time ever to reach the northern side. Three of his men were unable to do the journey because they were too unwell. Their feet were in very bad condition from the constricted, cold, wet conditions of life on board the boat. And, amazingly, three of our people were in exactly the same position, such that myself, Barry Gray, who's the chief mountain instructor for the UK Armed Forces currently, and Paul Larson, the navigator of our boat, were the ones who did the crossing for the first time since Shackleton's time, the same way as he did, with no equipment virtually. One small length of rope and old leather boots in the old woolen clothes, which were still wet from our sea journey, and we kind of suffered as he did.
Mm. How long did it take you, Tim?
It took 96 hours to cross South Georgia, but it's a long time when you're exposed to ferocious winds and cold and zero visibility off it, and some very treacherous terrain. There are a couple of very steep couloirs, downward climbing sections of the crossing that you have to negotiate, 1,000, 1,500 feet down, not quite vertical, but not far off.
Mm-hmm.
Very difficult in the terrible old gear we had. Our leather boots just had screws pushed through the soles, as he had, to try and give us some grip, but made it very, very treacherous.
Now, all the time you were going across here, you were also filming for the PBS documentary series that's coming up. Actually starts this week, I believe.
That's right. It's on tomorrow night. I have to say, I think it really does convey what we went through. I think viewers will, sit at home with a, hot cup of coffee or a beer or something like that, and, watch vicariously. Without being wet, without being hypothermic, maybe one or two people will identify with what we've been through,
right.
Having been in outdoor situations like that themselves. But I think for most people, they'll be able to watch a dangerous journey from the comfort of their own home, and I hope it really comes across them being in the boat with us.
Yeah, well, I am really looking forward to it. The book is called Chasing Shackleton, Recreating the World's Greatest Journey of Survival. And that comes out on sale tomorrow, am I correct, Tim?
That's right, yes. And, you know, it's a wonderful book. I think HarperCollins has done, you know, a great job. I say it's a wonderful book. I made my contribution by writing it as best I can. But, of course, the guys on the expedition contributed images to it along with mine. And, you know, I hope it does justice to the original journey and to what we were able to achieve.
Right. And you talked in the beginning about you began exploring as a way of, you know, self-growth. Tell me what you learned about yourself on this Chasing Shackleton journey.
I think I learned, as much as anything else, you know, the strength of the bond between people that allows you to attempt these most incredible things, which are very, very dangerous, and do so with whilst remaining, you know, totally loyal to one another. You know, nobody tried to score points against the other. Nobody tried to take a shortcut to safeguard themselves at the expense of another. We really did operate as a team. And it was a tremendous example of, you know, the human spirit at work. That was a really uplifting thing. And the other thing I would say is, you know, just, you know, I learned just how much there still is to learn. Every time I go out there, I realize the curve of what it is I'm learning about myself, my resourcefulness and the resourcefulness of others and the compassion of others and the sheer level of understanding you get of the environment in which you put yourself. That curve is still very steep. I'm still learning new things after 20 years of doing this stuff.
Yeah.
And it makes me want to keep going back for more.
Yeah. And very quick, because I know I have to let you go, but what is, I've spoken with a lot of adventurers and explorers, and they all have culture shock when they come back. What's the worst thing for you when you come back to reality?
I think it's the materialism of everyday life, the kind of the values that people have. Is, you know, look, humans are very adaptable. I come back into everyday life and I do my best to adjust to it, and I like the odd material thing too, like the next person, but it does kind of hit you in the face. You know, the trivial nature of a lot of the problems that people think they have and the materialism of everyday life, I do struggle with that. When you've been out there and you've experienced a certain purity of human emotion and spirit when you're out there with people just doing something for the love of it. None of us got paid to do this thing. We all did it because we loved it.
Well, I appreciate you sharing this time with us. The book is great, Chasing Shackleton, Recreating the World's Greatest Journey of Survival, on sale tomorrow. Tim Jarvis, thanks for being with us. I know people can find more about you at timjarvis.org. And what's the other site?
Shackletonepic.com.
Great. Thank you so much for being with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Vicky. Really enjoyed it.
And please do stay with us. We're going to take a very quick break. We will be right back with you. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Ashworm, charcoal, or iceberg, eventually steam. The continent I see, just iceberg.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
At Sundown Communications, we find that most of our clients are brilliant at what they do, but they lack the time and resources to write and create business messaging that delivers results. That's where we come in, providing a diverse range of professional copywriting services for fresh strategic web content, PR, advertising and promotion, marketing, speeches, and much more. Call us today so you can focus on what you do best, and we'll do the rest. Call 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617.
If you love dogs, tune in to The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, live every Wednesday from 2 to 3 p.m. We'll talk about everything dog and interview authors, experts, and amazing organizations, both locally and nationally. And don't even get me started on the pet food industry. I'm Julie Forbes. Find us online at www.dogradioshow.com and also as a free podcast on iTunes. The Dog Show with Julie Forbes, an evolved perspective on life with dogs.
Hi, I'm Pat Pauly. Tune into my show, Get Active, each Tuesday at 12 noon on Alternative Talk 1150. Each week, we invite a guest to talk about one of the wonderful activities in the Puget Sound region, ones that you may want to participate in. We'll focus on how adult beginners can comfortably get into all of these activities. You'll learn a lot about how you can get active. Be sure to listen. That's Get Active with me, Pat Pauly, at 12 noon each Tuesday on Alternative Talk 1150. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Independent programs, independent voices, independent ideas. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking with Megan McCrary about exploring various forms of yoga and picking the best practice for you, because they do vary a lot. And first, I wanted to go share something with you. A few months ago now, maybe a year, we had somebody on the show called Patty Dobrovolsky, and her website is upyourcreativegenius.com. And I really love her work. It's fun. It's playful. It's all about releasing your inner creativity. And instead of using dream boards, she uses illustration. So on one side of her sheet of paper, she'll draw a current status, where we're at now. And on the other side, a future state, where you'd like to be. And I've tried this. I'm on my third one now, and it is really powerful. But she has a newsletter that comes out. You can sign up for it if you're interested at upyourcreativegenius.com. And I wanted to share this one with you, since, you know, we are at the beginning of a new year, and so many people do set new dreams, have new dreams, and want to make those into goals and objectives for the year ahead so we can make changes. And she talks about the importance of daydreaming, and I really buy into this. I really think it's important myself. I daydream a lot when I walk my dog without even realizing it, really. But she says, according to Tom and David Kelly, IDEO founders, in their latest book, Creative Confidence, Unleashing the Creative Potential Within Us All, our brains can make cognitive leaps when we're not completely obsessed with a challenge, which is why it's a good idea sometimes, which is why good ideas sometimes come to us while we're in the shower or taking a long walk or a long drive. It's one of the reasons I keep lipstick in the shower so I can write on the wall because I get ideas and I think, wow, that's a great idea. And I'll remember it. And of course I don't. So I do keep a stick of lipstick in the shower and I scribble on the wall. And she says that when you daydream about something you long for, it doesn't matter what it is, whether it's a creative project, a challenge, a problem, an idea, your brain goes into what she calls underdrive, building that dream world in your subconscious with the help of your imagination. A daydream in this sense is just a means of eavesdropping, says Jonah Lehrer in a New York article on the merits of daydreaming. It's a way of eavesdropping on those novel thoughts generated by the unconscious. We think we're wasting time, but actually an intellectual fountain really is spurting. So daydreaming is good. I actually had one of the best bosses I ever worked for, one of the most successful people I ever worked for, daydreamed frequently. You'd often go into his office and find him with his feet on his desk, his arms behind his head, he's leaning back in his chair, staring into the blank corner of the wall. And he's like, go away, I'm thinking. But it really worked. So one of the suggestions that she makes is, instead of setting goals that you're not really buying into, you really have to want a goal to see it through to the end if it's a big one. If you don't know what you want, here's a great way of maybe sparking some ideas. And she says, carry a blank journal and pencil with you and ask the universe for a sequence of signs, tips, clues about your next step. And as things happen during the day that strike you as unusual, jot them down, draw a picture of that experience or thought, or just put a little scribble to remind yourself. And some examples of what she means about standing out is that you might be, for example, turning over a problem or idea when suddenly you hear a song that seems to respond to what you were thinking. You know, I was mulling over a problem for a few days over the holidays while I was sick, and I was pacing around my studio, and a book fell off the shelf, literally fell off the shelf. And I picked it up, and instantly I was like, oh my gosh, I have the answer, because I'd read the book many times and something out of there just jumped into me. So this space that we give ourselves is important. And at the end of the day, Patty Dabrowski recommends you look at your list or pictures of odd things, add them up, and try and make sense out of them. And if they don't make sense right away, go away, do something else for a while, and come back to it later. But it's all about giving yourself space and some free time to really think, just think and daydream. We'll be right back. We're going to talk with Megan McCrary, writer, dreamer, believer, and yoga teacher, about exploring your yoga options. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
OMG! Grammar abuse is no LOL! Hire a copywriter today and make sure your business communications rise above the crowd and deliver the results you need. Call 800-495-7617 today. BTW, IMHO, copywriters rule. Call 800-495-7617. BFN.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to BioClean, we cover the world of living successfully with your animal friends. This week, January 12th, it's our first Vet Sunday of the new year. Dr. Bill Burlingame will join us in the studio. We'll be talking about immune support for our animal friends and ourselves, Pluckner syndrome and cold lasers, plus open phone lines, so plan to give us a call with all your animal medical care questions on Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk. AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live, Mary Rockwood Lane joins us for more on healing with the arts and creating your sacred place. We'll also find out from the author of French Women Don't Get Fat, Marielle Gugliano, why French women don't get facelifts. Please join us and tell a friend where to find us every Monday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, right here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM and 98.9 HD Channel 3.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
There's nothing else like it on the dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, we are in exploring mode today. We just talked with Tim Jarvis, international world explorer, about his book, Chasing Shackleton, Recreating the World's Greatest Journey of Survival. And remember, that PBS series starts this week. I thought it was Wednesday, but he said it starts tomorrow. So just check your local listings. But it's about Tim's latest journey, recreating Shackleton's journey. And I'm very pleased to have with us now Megan McCrary. She's a writer, dreamer, believer, and yoga teacher. She's based in Los Angeles, and she's the author of Pick Your Yoga Practice. She teaches for Equinox Sports Clubs, works one-on-one with some of the entertainment industry's leading professionals, and holds workshops and retreats nationally and internationally. And you can find out more about Megan and her work at meganmccrary.com. And the book is called Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Styles of Yoga. Megan McCrary, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, I want to just begin with a little of your background and how you yourself got into yoga and why.
You know what, that's always an interesting question, because my mother Actually, my grandmother was doing yoga in the 70s. And I remember going to a class with her when I was in junior high and falling asleep. And then wrote yoga off. It's like, yoga's for old ladies. I'm done with that. And then when I was in college, my mother, who was a very high-strung person, started doing yoga and started swearing by it and still was trying to get me to do it. And I was, you know, an athlete and convinced it was for old ladies. It wasn't until I graduated from undergrad. I went exploring. I went to Costa Rica for a few months. And it was there I was practicing in an open-air yoga studio with a Brazilian teacher. And I just really fell in love with yoga and found that when I came back, I just clung to yoga. When I came back, having graduated from college, been to Costa Rica, I was a little lost. So then I just started practicing and practicing twice a day, which then led to me wanting to deepen my yoga practice. So I took a teacher training, not even thinking I was going to teach.
It's funny how people do have different perceptions about yoga. I was trying to talk my brother into it, and he's like, no, it's boring. All you do is, you know, this, and he kind of danced around the room a little bit. And I'm like, no. You'd be surprised how many different kinds of yoga there are. But you have an interesting story about how you chose your practice, because you say you loved your first yoga teacher, but then you did a little bit of exploring to look at other things. So how did that come about for you?
So, you know, the studio I had was practicing at closed, which led me sort of homeless. And so I started taking yoga. I was living in Scottsdale, Arizona at the time. So I started taking classes at all these different places all over the valley. And, you know, some was like strictly white walls, only white clothing. I liked the chanting. The practice was slow and boring. Some I went to and it was like too strict, or the practice was too physical. When I walked into an Anyasara yoga studio, I knew that I had found just the right fit for me. The community, the Anyasara themes when they start, that sort of anchoring the meaning. Coming from an athletic background, I love the alignment. And to be honest, I'm not sure I would still be doing yoga or I would have started teaching if I had not found Anyasara.
That's interesting. And I had not heard of Anyasara yoga before. For you, what makes that different? You talked just a little bit about the alignment, but how, you know, for you to stick with it after you say you might not have continued?
You know what? So a couple of the different things. The alignment, I'm really into, like, I have almost an engineer's mind, so I like the therapeutic, biomechanical, how the body works. I also like, Anyasara is a very playful practice where we try a lot of new poses. We do partner work. There isn't we're here to get to somewhere. It follows a tantric philosophy, which is very different. We can get into that if you like. But that influences the way the teacher greets you. They're very nurturing atmosphere, where some studios are very strict.
Right.
You know, and we all have different personalities. I just happen to have a very emotional personality that needs a little more of a nurturing aspect.
Oh, that's interesting.
Which Anyasara provided.
Yeah. Well, it is a good thing you found that. So I know that yoga's changed a lot over the years, and you talk about that. You know, it's been over 30 years since I took my first yoga class, and I fell in love with it immediately. My teacher had arthritis extremely an extreme form, really, because she was in a wheelchair for most of her time.
Wow.
And she was 66. And when I took my class, there wasn't anything she couldn't do. I mean, she was out of her wheelchair and she just had started taking classes and ended up becoming a teacher and was just doing everything. She was amazing. And so I really fell in love with that. But I've tried various forms of yoga, and I do want to look at some of the different forms. But let's look at how it's changed, first of all, since it came to the States.
Oh, well, it's been very interesting. There's been quite the love-hate affair with yoga in America, beginning way back at, you know, the first New World Parliament, or the first new fair. And when yoga originally came in the form of ideas and concepts, and mostly meditations. Indian swamis and gurus were coming over and sharing these views on spirituality, and mostly that all paths lead to the same place. And then in the 70s, we saw a lot of ashrams come up. That was when the whole hippie movement turned yoga, and there was a lot of chanting. Ram Dass was leading. People were taking pilgrimages to India. So there was a very spiritual but still very Indian-based lineages of yoga going on. Then with the aerobics craze of the 80s, Jane Fonda came through and yoga pretty much disappeared.
Mm.
So yoga had to revamp itself once again, and in the 90s it came back as this way to lose weight, trim down, tone up. Suddenly you had celebrities doing yoga. Everything from Bikram yoga to power yoga became available. Yoga's now in the gyms. Yoga's now being sponsored by all these Adidas amazing brands. So it's just, it's become very American, actually, and very physical.
Yeah. And of course, we've now blended it with Pilates. We've got Yoga Lattes, yes, or Piloga, whichever you prefer. I think I'm kind of a purist on some levels. I was thinking when I was looking at your book, because I know when I've looked for a yoga teacher myself, I've always wanted somebody who takes it seriously, because I have had yoga teachers who just walk around goofing around. And to me, you know, for my practice, that's not what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me how somebody... What kind of things somebody should look for when they're looking for a teacher? And obviously it's going to vary depending on what mm-hmm. they're looking for and their practice. And
mm-hmm. You know what I say, really to first ask yourself some questions. What is it exactly that you are wanting out of your experience in the yoga room? You know, do you not do any physical activity and you're looking for yoga to get you to become more active? Are you looking at yoga to develop a more quiet mind, a sense of self? You know, there's all these different experiences we want to have. So depending on that, and then your needs, physical, do you have limitations, are there areas? I mean, I'd be willing to bet, was your first teacher an Iyengar teacher?
Well, back then, the very first one was Hatha, but the one that I really loved, I fell in love with him in San Diego, was I'd had a hip injury, and I used to run 5 miles a night. And I'd gone through 9 months of physical therapy 3 times a week, and it was getting worse. And it got to the point where I could barely walk around the block. I was in so much pain. And so I thought, you know, this therapy isn't working. I'm going to try and find a really good yoga teacher. And so I interviewed about 12 teachers, and I came across this one. And he interviewed me to see if he'd accept me in his class, and told me that if I'd commit to coming twice a week, he'd have me running 5 miles, you know, within a month. And mm-hmm. and I did. Within 3 weeks, I was running 5 miles a night.
I mean,
again.
Well, you see, then you had came with very specific needs.
And that was Iyengar. That, to answer your question, that one was Iyengar.
I was willing to bet the way you were referring and speaking to it. So somebody with limitations or injuries or looking to recover, Iyengar is a place to go. Iyengar is the safest. You're going to learn therapeutically. You're going to recover. They're going to show you how to, you know, modify the poses to make them healthier for your body so you can increase your range of motion, things like that. Now, let's say you're looking for a more spiritual aspect, or you're looking to get inspired or clear your energy, you know, then you're going to go to like a Kundalini-type practice that does a lot of movement of energy. You know, if you're looking to sweat, you're going to go to a power yoga, vinyasa-type class. And then I love the idea, it's not just the style, as you mentioned, you interviewed the teacher.
Right.
So it's very important that you connect personally with the teacher, that you trust the teacher. I'm a big fan of alignment. Anyasara came out of Iyengar, so I'm a really big fan of alignment.
Yes.
So I'm always looking to see, have they studied yoga therapy? Have they studied yoga alignment? What's their focus? You can tell a lot with if a class is breath-focused or alignment-focused. If it says breath-focused, it's going to be a little faster pace. Alignment-focused, it's going to be more like your Iyengars and really carefully placing the bones and the structure of your body on the mat.
So if somebody's never done yoga before, where's a good place for them to start?
I'm a huge fan of basics or fundamentals classes. Even if you've been practicing yoga for a little while, I think it's so beneficial to go back and take a beginner's class. in any style of yoga, because there you're going to get the foundation of that style. Once you have the foundation and you know how to modify the poses and you can breathe with your body, you can go into the next class confidently and safely. And back to as far as I'm concerned, being an alignment teacher, I think the best place to start is Iyengar yoga, Anusara yoga, Jiva Mukti has a good alignment system. Places where they really hone in on beginners. Iyengar, for example, you have to take a beginner's class, no matter how long you've been practicing yoga. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, you do, definitely. And it's all in, about integrity of the pose and that. It's never about the depth. It's
100%.
About, yeah, it's about the alignment and the integrity of the pose. Well, I want to look at some of the philosophies behind some of... You have a great chart in here that just speaks out to, you know, how you can very quickly tell at a glance what might work for you. But I want to look a little deeper at some of the philosophies of some of your favorite yogas. Well, you need to take a very quick break, first of all. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and my guest is Megan McCrary. And she's written a really great book called Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Styles of Yoga. So I was surprised myself, even though I've been doing it for over 30 years, there were tons of yoga in here I'd never even heard of. So please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Martha Childress with the Natural Choice Network. Join us every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. right here on Alternative Talk 1150. Each week, we invite leaders from our sustainable community to share their unique visions and valuable insights. You'll learn great tools to make your life greener, healthier, and more sustainable for generations to come. Thank you for making the natural choice. That's the Natural Choice Network every Tuesday at 12:30 p.m. Please join us.
Next week on Conversations Live, Mary Rockwood Lane joins us for more on healing with the arts and creating your sacred place. We'll also find out from the author of French Women Don't Get Fat, Marielle Gugliano, why French women don't get facelifts. Please join us and tell a friend where to find us every Monday at noon Pacific time, 3 p.m. Eastern, for Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, right here on Alternative Talk 1150 a.m. and 98.9 HD Channel 3.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to help you live well, live strong.
Don't forget, this is Alternative Talk, 1150 a.m.
And welcome back, everybody. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we are talking with Megan McCrary. She defines herself as a writer, dreamer, believer, yoga teacher, and her new book is called Pick Your Yoga Practice, Exploring and Understanding Different Styles of Yoga. You know, and if you've taken a yoga class ever and walked away like my brother did and didn't like it, you might try a different style of yoga, because as you'll find in Megan's book, they're very, very different and have different philosophies and different practices, different poses, different alignments. So Megan, I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the different philosophies. If somebody's looking for a really good mind, body, spirit connection, what would you recommend?
As far as styles go, I think integral yoga, Sivananda yoga, you want to look for a style that has more meditation probably in it. Even though Iyengar yoga, they would consider mind, body, spirit, because you're using your mind mm-hmm. to organize your body, which creates a meditation. they don't bring a whole lot of spiritual concepts in right away. Places like Kundalini yoga, Integral Sivananda, Ananda yoga, things like this. But, you know, to be honest, at the root, all of the yoga systems are about the mind-body-spirit connection. The way those are viewed are different according to the different philosophies.
Right. Some will have more meditation. And as you said, Iyengar, the classes, at least I've taken, do not have a great deal of meditation in them. But there is still that, you still have that mind-body-spirit connection.
Right. Well, and what's great about the Iyengar system is they're centered. So then at the center, you could take a meditation-specific class, but you probably won't get it in your regular postural classes.
Mm. And I've seen, I was trying to explain this to my brother when I'll be honest, he said yoga's for sissies, right? and I said, when I used to go to my classes in San Diego with Asan, then there were four other guys in the class. It was a very small group. He kept it very private. And those four guys used to sweat buckets, I'm telling you. Mm-hmm. And not because the room was hot. It was because of the strength and endurance poses. So mm-hmm. if somebody likes a more strenuous workout, what's the route for them to go?
I would head towards... So Ashtanga yoga is like the grandfather of the vinyasa-type practices. Ashtanga yoga practices a set series every time, and you have to usually go to an Ashtanga center. They're called shalas. But other than that, all over the place, you'll find vinyasa yoga classes, flow yoga classes, vinyasa flow, power yoga classes. Those are the ones that employ what is called a vinyasa system, a breathing movement system, so one movement per breath. They're very dynamic, very aerobic, very sweaty, things like that. And I tell you, I teach out here at Equinox, which is a sports club, and it, no matter how strong or buff or physically fit a man is, yoga's a whole new set.
Mm-hmm.
Yoga's a new set of muscles, a new set of openings, a new set of struggle. It's, I dare your brother to come take another class. Come take one of my classes.
I know, I'm dead him too. And the other thing is that, you know, a lot of guys, because of they typically will do weight training, a lot of guys are less flexible. And we know that flexibility is important to us as we age. And yoga, of course, is great for flexibility.
Mm-hmm. And yoga, no matter what sport you play, yoga is only going to enhance that. Yoga will increase your range of motion. So think as a golfer, deepen your twist, connect into the right places. Also, we talk about yoga brings the body back to what I refer to as the optimal original blueprint. So as you do things, biking, sitting in a car, you know, all these things that take our body out of alignment, we can then turn to our yoga practice to bring everything back in to make sure we're addressing the things we address, even as we do the things that could potentially hurt us.
Mm-hmm. So as far as philosophy, is there... are there some that have stronger philosophies?
Mm-hmm. You know, all of the systems, what's interesting is all of the yoga styles and systems, they do have an underlying philosophy. Now, how overtly that's presented is going to vary from style to style. Kundalini yoga, their spirituality, their philosophy, their non-dual philosophy is right up there, right up front. Because they're dealing specifically with Kundalini energy, which comes from a tantra practice, you'll get that non-dual language. Iyengar yoga is actually very classical yoga philosophy. And if you study with one teacher, as you have long enough, I'm sure you're going to get to the Yoga Sutra.
Right.
Which then, but places like, you know, and then you have Vini yoga, which you can choose to leave any of the philosophy out 100%.
Yeah, I was telling you in the break, I tried a Vini yoga class once, and the teacher kept, she was not a very spiritual person, I don't think.
Right.
She kept telling me off, because Vini yoga is mini, mini, mini movements, very tiny little movements. And she kept saying, it's because you do Iyengar and you're used to big, sweeping, strong movements. And you have to keep these really tiny. And I didn't. And she said, you probably feel as though you're not doing any work. And I said, I don't. And she said, I promise you tomorrow you'll notice. And I surely did.
Mm-hmm. So I've been in different workshops and been a yoga, like, where you hone in on one tiny action of one muscle.
Right.
And you don't even realize that the next day, man, you're sore.
Oh, yes.
It's that really integrated, isolated work.
Yeah. So it really is all about exploration, and it really is about, you know, figuring before you go, what do I want to achieve from this? Do I want to, have more meditation? Do I want a more physical, strenuous workout? Do I just want to be more flexible? And of course, there's the flowing one. I can't remember the proper name for it, but the one where we just flow from movement to movement.
Mm-hmm. It's the vinyasa, Ashtanga yoga. They'll continually move.
Right.
And then the Iyengar, the alignment type practices, they'll hold the poses a bit longer. You know, and then you get into like a Kripalu yoga, which is bigger on the East Coast, and they're doing both. You know, it's all really quite fascinating. Once you get into a system, there are many types of practices even within that style.
Right, right. So let's look at some of the benefits of yoga. I know personally, I am really, really, really good in a crisis. If you have a crisis, you want me there with you. I stay very, very calm, and I just stay focused on how do we solve this now. And many people have pointed this out to me. I never really noticed, but over the years, many people have pointed that out to me, how calm I am in a crisis. And I do put that down to many years of practicing yoga. Mm-hmm. I once talked with a journalist who'd been kidnapped in Iran, and he was let out eventually. And when I asked him, what was the one thing that kept you going? And he said, I know this sounds weird. He said, but I do believe it's because I practiced yoga for many years. I just went within.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible. That's one of, if we can get to that place in yoga practice, to be able to rely on our interior environment, to be able to go in and connect there, I think that is one of the most valuable gifts that will serve anybody. And it's the breath. So when we're starting to get stressed out in any sort of moment, a crisis, big or small, we hold our breath.
Right.
Which then signals to our nervous system, fight or flight. Well, clearly you've done, you know, you're centered enough that you probably don't even at all, and you just continue to breathe, holding that space for the people around you. And whether or not you're offering advice, your nervous system being calm allows their nervous system to calm down.
Right.
And to take a breath. It's quite amazing. But
yeah.
There's so many gifts.
Yeah. Well, of course, we've talked, you know, flexibility, strength, endurance, and again, that all depends on what kind of yoga you practice. Mm-hmm. So when somebody comes to you as a yoga teacher yourself, and somebody comes to you to a yoga class, what kind of questions do you ask them, or do you take anybody into the class?
Anybody's a very broad, you know, safety first for me. I'm going to Montessori, it's safety. So if somebody's, you know, very overweight and I know they're not going to be safe, of course, I'm not going to let them in. I don't demand that they... I live in L.A., we have a very transient city. Mm. So if I were to demand that everybody who came in practice with me twice a week, it may not hook anybody right away. I tend to do get those very loyal students, but I want everyone to feel comfortable, first and foremost. I'll always ask somebody's name. I'll always ask, you know, let me know if there's anything I need to know. You know, why are you here? I won't even ask why you're here. I'll let people have the experience first.
Right, right. Well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think it's important. The teacher, as we've said, is as important as the practice that you choose. Mm-hmm. Megan McCreary, I thank you for being with us. Great book, Pick Your Yoga Practice. I think this will be really helpful to people who just haven't found the right one for them yet. Final thought in like 20 seconds that you'd like to leave our listeners with.
Oh, yes, Pick Your Yoga Practice. It's also a great book for anybody who has been in yoga and you just want to learn more about the other styles. I think it's truly an exploration, an easy book to pick up, zip through, and you'll probably, just flipping through the pages, learn something about yoga you hadn't even thought about before.
Fabulous. And where can people find out more about you and your work and the book?
You can find me and the book on my website, meganmccrary.com. That's MeganMccrary.com.
All right. Well, Megan McCrary, thank you for exploring yoga with us today. Namaste.
Namaste. Thank you, Vicky.
And I want to thank each of you for joining us on our first show of 2014. I'm looking forward to bringing you some healing segments. We're going to be looking at healing with the arts, different aspects of that going forward through January. Thanks for being with us today. You can find me at info@conversationslive.net or 800-495-7617. Until next week, live well, live strong. Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.